Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Q, it's 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Between now and Tuesday, the specials include Yingling Lager, 24-pack cans, $15.99. Moosehead, 12-pack cans, $9.95. Spiked Seltzer, 12-pack cans, $12.95. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day in the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. Before we get to the play-by-play call today, one slice of news on the basketball recruiting front. Justin McCoy, who had signed his letter of intent with Penn State in November, has been asked to be released from that letter of intent. He's been granted that and now can sign someplace else if he so desires. I think I have a strong feeling where that other place is. I wanted to pass that along. Before we get to Kevin Franzen, our play-by-play call of the day, our good friend Brandon Gowden on last night's Purdue game. Ryan Klein, fastest release since Joe Namath.
13 to shoot for the Boilermakers. Final minute, they're down three. Here's Klein. He's been the hero. Two crossover dribbles. Eight to shoot. He's between the circles. He drives. He steps back. Fade away three. Good! Unbelievable! Another one from Klein. He's got 27, and we're tied at 80. 30 seconds remaining.
And Klein has scored 12 of the last 13 for the Boilermakers.
Rick Barnes is going to use one of his final two timeouts with 29.8 to go. And Ryan Klein, the threes that he has hit down the stretch may be the most impressive I've seen in recent tournament history.
Well, as a guy who's done, half dozen Ryan Klein games in his career, I've seen this act before, so I wasn't surprised. The 27 is a career high, but his release is unbelievably quick. He just snaps that thing off, and it's a line drive. It's not a big arcing shot. All right, let's bring in Kevin Franzen. Kevin, welcome. The Phillies are on track to be 162-0. It's great to have you with us.
I love the attitude on that one. But, hey, let's talk about that Purdue game, because anyone that's complaining about the foul on that him kicking out his foot, like, seriously, yeah. go to a basketball court and try to shoot that shot without kicking out your foot, right? I mean, that was incredible. Right. What a game.
That was high-level hoops at 20 paces last night.
And then you get the Texas Tech and Michigan game right after that. So that was awesome. Great stuff last night.
Just so you know, Kevin, nobody in Springfield at the Hall of Fame is calling for that tape.
No. That was so bad. It was 6-6 going with like 9:30 left in the first. I'm going, I grew up around basketball. It's like one of my favorite sports. It is my favorite sport besides baseball. But just the NCAA tournament, when you have a 6-6 game with 9:30 left in the first half, like, just stop the game. Call it.
I did a Big Ten tournament game where the final was 36-33 in 2011.
Let me guess, it was Wisconsin and, Penn State?
Yep. Yes, Wisconsin and Penn State. Penn State won the game. It actually probably put Penn State into the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, that's right.
And I also teach a class here at Penn State. So the broadcasting class, they asked me about what's it like to do a game like that. And I said, well, here's the bottom line. At some point with 5 minutes to go, margin becomes the whole game. It doesn't matter if it's 93-90 or 36-33. It's now who's winning or losing. Now, that was me basically blowing off the first 35 minutes of the game.
But I mean, in all honesty, same goes the advice that I was given. Like, it doesn't. If it's a blowout, if it's a terrible game, if there's errors that are going everywhere, it shouldn't affect your broadcast, right? I mean, like, you should always have you're calling a game.
You're calling the game, and there's winning and losing that comes into play. Or maybe, say, if it's baseball, and you're doing games. Now you're starting to maybe see some trends. Maybe a couple of guys are building a hitting streak here that when you come back the next day is something that you can build upon. There's always something you can take out of it, right?
No doubt. No doubt.
Let's get to the Phillies. I want to talk about lineup balance. There's a certain way now. Obviously, analytics enters into some of this, but there's also traditional lineup balance. Do you like the lineup balance of the Phillies initially?
Absolutely. And you can say what you want because of the success yesterday. But I think you would ask most sabermetric inclined front offices, analytically inclined front offices, they would love to have the same lineup as much as possible. They would love that. They would love to have five starters be able to go 200 innings and feel like they're going to be better than anyone that they have, whether it's in the pen. You know what I'm saying? Like, so when it comes to this team and seeing where Michael's hitting eighth, and with Odubel and Herrera in the 6-7 spot, and you can flip-flop them however which way you want, the depth in the lineup, there is no breath for the pitcher. Is it one that is going to be like, you know, we're going to hit 20 homers during the week? Maybe, absolutely it could. But it's also it's a lineup that has the ability to put the ball in play. It has the ability to go first and third, score on a double in the gap standing up. The biggest thing for me, can this team score on a double in the gap standing up? I would say 7 of the 8 guys, maybe. I mean, because once Reese goes, Reese can run. I mean, Franco might be the only one for me that is the one that might have to slide at home. But I'm just saying, like, their athleticism, the depth that they have, the ability to maneuver guys in the lineup if they need to, right? If they need to move, Cesar up to leadoff spot and bring Kutch back into a run-driving role, they could do that. And it's not just saying this after one game. It's watching it throughout the entire, Cactus League, the Grapefruit League. And for me, when they had the lineup together, they protected each other. And that's a huge thing. The year that Bryce Harper has, in my mind, is all coordinated with how good is Reese and how good is JT, the guys behind him, right? I mean, if Reese is making them pay every time, it's not going to happen every time, but if he's making them pay more times than not, Bryce's going to start seeing a lot of pitches to hit. They're not going to be, pitching around him. And the same thing goes for Reese. If they feel like, oh, we got to pitch around Reese, well, okay, you got JT Realmuto behind you, who is, in my mind, maybe a top 2-3 hitter in that lineup as far as just overall, like power, just hitting ability, and then you take into account his wheels, and I think that you have a top 3 guy with him.
It's interesting, JT Realmuto, who is, I thought, an incredible acquisition, but it gets overshadowed by Harper, and I understand that. But look, you know the value of a guy in that spot, and you know the value of a guy that can hit out of that spot because of Buster Posey. I mean, what does JT bring to the table? And are there any qualities that you see in him when you've watched him that that remind you of Buster Posey in any way?
Absolutely. And knowing Buster for so long, being here in the Bay Area with him and playing with him and knowing his personality, just talking to JT, they're similar. Very analytical in their mind. They have a good time, but they're very serious about their job. And their job is to do everything possible to win a game. And when it goes to that, when it comes to hitting, it's the line-to-line that he has, that Buster has. Maybe not as much the bat control as far as two strikes, per se, but like there's not a lot of guys that do that Buster has. But the thing that just tops Buster is he has the ability to run. He can beat out a chopper in the hole, the sixth hole, in August, right? We're not talking about April. April, JT, right. Absolutely. Most catchers get, we can't put Yadier in there, but most catchers in April have a chance to beat something out there, right? I mean, in April. But you go to August, they start to slow down and do all that. What JT is able to do, and watching him over the years, he sustains that speed. Maybe not top-notch, but you can't really. Where do you go from? You go from, I don't know. Well, you're going from a Ferrari to a souped-up Tesla, I guess you could say later on, right? I mean, okay. I don't know. Like, it's not really a bad thing to go with there with JT and his legs. So,
right.
with him in regards to offensively, I think there's a lot of similarities. Be able to go opposite field, stay up the middle. Two outs, runners in scoring position, I think is huge with JT. He's a guy that, you know, doesn't concede the inning's over. And I think that's a lot with Buster. Buster's a guy that, you know, over the years has shown that. With that being said, I still don't think JT's hit his peak yet. It's the scariest thing. We haven't seen the best as far as even when he was with the Marlins, because I think you're in a situation where yesterday's crowd, if that's going to be the consistency at the ballpark this year, oh my gosh. For a guy that played in front of 9,000 fans every game, like, can you imagine that? Can you imagine the uplift? Can you imagine, like, I feel tired going to the... You never feel tired. You never do. Not with the energy that they had yesterday. And so I see so many positives with JT. Like you said, it's going to be overshadowed by the Bryce thing, but I think that could ultimately be the most important signing of the year, or trade of the year, acquisition of the year, because of the position that he plays, and because of how good he really is at that position that he plays.
Yeah, in fact, I think the Phillies will probably surpass the total Marlin attendance from last year by the end of May. And that's not a joke. I'm not kidding around. It's probably going to be like that.
The end of May, awesome.
They'll probably surpass
how
that.
How awesome is that? That's so great. And if you're and you're like, for Philly fans or baseball fans in general, you should love when a guy like JT Realmuto goes from a downtrodden organization where their fan base sucks. Let's be honest here. It sucks. And he doesn't really know the true love, right? A true fan base love. And, you know, guys are going to always say, oh, I don't play, you know, just so I get recognized and all that. No. But being adored and being just absolutely revered in your city, that's a huge deal. Any athlete will try to, like, downplay that. I'm sorry. Someone recognizes you down the street and, like, just, I'm a huge fan, and they do that consistently like they do in Philly. Oh, man.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Talk about it.
Means a lot. What does it mean in the clubhouse that Bryce Harper's been to the playoffs? And actually, I think when he's been in the playoffs, I think he's actually performed for the most part pretty well. Jake Arrieta obviously has been to the mountain. David Robertson has been on successful Yankee teams. What does that mean to a clubhouse, in your opinion, as someone who's lived in a clubhouse?
I think it means a lot, because you know that I think guys that have been consistently to the playoffs, yeah, they think about it, but they are the ones that stay in the moment the best, right? They're the ones that are able to go day in, day out and perform at their highest level, because they know if they do, it gets them that much closer to the playoffs. And if you are a mainstay in stuff like a Jake, for instance, with Jake Arrieta being, you know, the ace 1-2 of the staff in Chicago, every fifth day. It wasn't like, you know, in May he was like, can't wait till October on this whole thing. No, he was so into the moment, and I think that's the biggest thing. Because if this team, as we saw last year, this team gets into August and they have a lead, or they're in first, or they're a couple games out, whatever it is, and they're chasing, what are they chasing? Are they chasing the playoffs, or are they chasing that game in front of them? And I think those two, especially Bryce and Jake, they're able to know more than anything. You have to chase that game in front of you, that game that's right there that day, because if you do and you get it, you roll around with it, boom, you beat it, so you know you're closer to the promised land of where you want to go, and that's the playoffs, where it's a crapshoot for everyone. And I think having those two in there, and then you add in, like you said, David Robertson, I think is even bigger. But then I think more than anything, guys like Gene Segura, guys that have not been really in that and have had success in the big leagues, they're hungry for it. And I think that is a huge thing that we might overlook. And the same thing goes with Andrew McCutchen. I think he's got to experience a little bit of the playoffs.
Yeah.
That's it. He wants the bling. He wants the ring. And, you know, McCutchen, to me, is that guy that I could see coming in here and having that hunger that that guys feed off of, you know. And but he's never, it's never talked about from him. But guys know that he's hungry to get something going in the next couple years of his contract here in Philadelphia.
No question about that. It's also it's a grind, and the Phillies found out firsthand once August began last year what kind of grind it really is.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If you're a younger player, and I go up to Kevin Franzen and I say, hey, look, you've lived this grind before. You know, how do you handle the grind of 162? So what would your advice to them be?
Honestly? Oh, man. You're playing baseball. There's no grind. I mean, I'm very rare on that whole thing because I don't see it as a grind. What's grind, you know, grindy is digging ditches and stuff and working till, you know, wee hours of the morning, you know, for all intents and purposes. Like, I just don't see baseball as being a grind. Physically at times, yeah, it's a grind, but at the same time, you're going like, what else would you rather be doing? Like, you wake up in the morning, and if you are, for a young guy, if you're feeling sore and tired, like, get over it. You're in the big leagues. You're in a playoff chase. You're in a situation where everyone dreams of. And, you know, it took me until I think my year 32 of my life to get into the playoffs. I've been dreaming about it, been like, you know, going into spring training, thinking nonstop that this is the year, this is the year, this is the year. And I finally get it in one of my last years of playing, and I will never forget that feeling because I always had that feeling. It wasn't a grind. It was a grind only mentally when it came to, like, it like it's on the cusp, you know what I mean? Like, you're right there. You're like, oh, man, that might have been the mental grind. It's like, I just want to get this done. I want to get in the playoffs. I want to experience this. But for a young guy, man, you're playing. It's easy to say. It's cliche to say. It's all that. It's a kid's game. It is. I don't care if it's a kid's game. It's a grown man's game, too, and you should have so much fun doing it.
Totally agree with that perspective because, obviously, I broadcast games for 35, 40 years. Believe me, there's no such thing as a grind to doing it. It's fun being at the ballpark or in the arena or in the stadium every single time, and you can tell the players feel the same way about what they're doing. I want to ask you about the transition to broadcasting, though, because obviously you and I are having a lot of fun talking back and forth here, and it's a really easy thing for you to do. So what's been the easiest part of the transition to the broadcast part, and what's also been the transition you didn't expect?
The easiest thing in the world, and I tell this to everyone, is being a color analyst hard? I say no. I say yes when it comes to describing things, you know, perfectly or giving that, you know, the right picture. That's hard. But I did a sports talk show here in the Bay Area for a couple of years, and I mean, it was fun. I love sports more than anything, but it kind of, you know, kind of wears on you a little bit here and there. The best thing in the world is opening the window and watching the game like you're just, and you're talking about the game. I always feel like I'm just...
You got that right. You got that right.
I'm going, are you kidding me? Like, I'm not stuck in a studio. I am out here. I get to smell, whether it's good or bad, I get to smell the stadium smells. I get to hear everything. I get to hear people complaining about the umpires or the coaches' decisions. It just became like an easy transition because I love baseball. I am more passionate about baseball than anything. And the Phillies organization, whether people think it's, I'm playing something on this one, I love the Phillies organization. I was in it for 3 years, whether it was in the minor leagues or the big leagues, doesn't matter. It was 3 years, 3+ years, including the next spring training at 14. The family that they created, David Montgomery being number one in this whole thing, it makes it easy to want to go to the yard, go to the play, and do all that stuff because it is the best. It is so much fun. Now, the hardest thing, I'm definitely not a loose cannon. There's two things that I find hard. Number one is filling in for L.A. Because L.A. to me, I'm very lucky here, and basically my mentors were Dwayne Kuiper and Mike Kruko with the San Francisco Giants, and they were guys,
they're
buddies.
Can't ask for better.
And they taught me so much, and then I get to Larry and Scott when I was playing there, and they were nothing but good to me, and I talk to them all the time, and I love L.A. It's so, like, be like having to, you know, go on for him when he's away, it's tough. It's tough because people love L.A. I love L.A. Like, do I want to hear me or L.A.? I want to hear L.A., right? I mean, that is the truth. I love the job. Trust me, I love the job. But it's the fact that, like, there's something about him and Scott, the genuine friendship that they have. It's hard to say that it's easy to walk in there. Now, Scott Fransky makes everything easy. He makes my life easy. He is a friend of mine. The friendship will always continue to keep growing, and hopefully it will keep growing for many, many years. So that's like it kind of backs off that and makes it easy. So another hard part, and sorry, long-winded on this, was they challenged me to do some play-by-play during the spring training and doing, taping and just doing it, not live or anything. And the speed of the game and how crazy fast it was as a play-by-play guy on the radio. Holy hell. That game moved so fast, and there were so many times I caught myself going, slow down, slow down, slow down. I already had respect for play-by-play guys. I already did. And that didn't need to be seconded, you know, by doing it. It was just afterwards you just go, man, how do you do that all the time? And there was a play like against the Blue Jays, and luckily this was on tape. So Segura makes an error, runner at second, Kevin Pillar was rounding third with two outs, and the next thing you know, Segura goes and picks it up and fires the third. He gets in a rundown with the guy at third. Now the rundown goes at first, and I, like I said, I was just doing a taping on this. I went, oh man. And I just shut down because the game moved so fast at that point for me. I had no idea what to do. And so, you know, Scott listened to it. Rob Brooks listened to it. They just told me, well, back it off, try to go as simple as possible. And so I just kept on going every day to do the play-by-play just to make sure that if, you know, need be, if I have to do a couple innings here and there, if Scott, Scott needs to go somewhere for a second, I could do it. And I got two live innings during spring training. It was so much fun.
Well, it was a lot of fun having you on today. I really appreciate it a lot. You do a terrific job when you're on, and we appreciate the time you gave us today.
Well, I thank you for that, and I think it's next year my San Jose State Spartans go to Happy Valley, so I'm making my way to my first Penn State football game.
Well, we're looking forward to having you here.
All right. Can't wait.
Yeah, look up Jack Hamm and me before the game. We're more than happy to talk with you for a while.
That would be awesome. Meet you. Thank you so much.
You bet. Hey, Kev, thanks so much.
All right. You guys have a good one.
Kevin Franzen, who does a terrific job on the Phillies Radio Network, which, of course, you hear right here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. That was a lot of fun. The King is coming up next. Got some news for the King. All right, got some news for him. I know you're anxious to hear about the news, aren't you?
Cannot wait for this.
I have not told you what the news is.
Nope.
All right. We'll come back. King in a few moments here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Brewers Outlet.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, great to have you with us on the show. And today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. Hey, look, stock up now. I think the four games tonight are going to be fantastic. I think they're all going to be in the mode of Purdue, Tennessee, and not Texas Tech, Michigan. You got four really good ones tonight. Then you got the Elite Eight this weekend, two tomorrow, two on Sunday. So stock up. How about some great specials between now and Tuesday? Yingling Lager 24-pack cans, $15.99. Moosehead 12-pack cans, $9.95. Spiked Seltzer, done the Suits way, 12-pack cans, $12.95. Best selection of beer anywhere. Imports, domestics, microbrews, wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed, second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. And I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. He celebrated a birthday this week and did not want anybody to know. It is the king. Happy birthday.
Thank you, sir. Happy birthday.
Happy
halfway
up.
There.
Oh. Halfway there, you're halfway to 120. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Doing good. What a great week. We have a new addition to Studio 305. It is a double lazy boy, all power driven.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. I'm telling you, once you go that way, that's it. Comfortable. I slept in it one night. It just didn't go over well. But that was good.
So in the armrest, place to sit your drink?
Oh, yeah. Yep. You set your drink. Everything is... The only thing that's a little confusing is which clicker you're going to hit. You know, sometimes you change the channel, you put your headrest up. But it's perfect. And then we got a new clicker that you can talk into the clicker and tell it what channel to go to. My life has just taken a complete upgrade. If I never left that room, I'd be happy. So. Oh, it's great. I'm telling you. It kicks up, and then it goes back, and you can put it right against the wall because it goes out. It doesn't go back like a regular lazy boy. And then it's got a head thing, and it pushes your head up so you can watch the TV at a perfect angle. I never want to leave. It's so good. Easy to get in, easy to get out of, perfect height. TV's perfectly clear.
Take a photo of with that new flip phone of yours. I want to see that.
Yeah, okay. I love this phone. My life has just taken a total upgrade with my little, you know, I can play my trivia crack and my word, and I can crank my head up perfectly to do that and watch the TV at the same time. So,
Stevie's never returning to PA.
You know, yeah, maybe not. Bring my chair. So, what's up there? How's the weather?
It's fine. We actually have a little bit of news. So,
what?
And, King, I'm learning this along with you at the same time. I have no clue what he's going to say.
Oh, boy.
There is a sixth grandchild on the way.
Okay, let me guess which one. Megan.
No.
Danny?
Yep.
Really?
Yes.
Lovely.
All right, Danny. Lovely. Big Dan will be a dad.
Nice.
Danny, if you're listening, congratulations.
That is so awesome.
Yeah. It was like Rocky says, Danny, I can't believe you did this.
Yep.
Yo, Adrian. Wow.
We've been flying
so how long
in November.
Is Canvas along?
8 weeks, so November 1st.
Oh, I got a little news, too. It's not my granddaughter, but my wife's granddaughter would be my step-granddaughter, I guess. She is in Boston Hospital right now delivering.
Wow. How about that? Congratulations. I hope everything goes extremely well.
They do call me Grampy, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, so. Yeah. But, yeah, she's went into labor this morning. So she'll probably be in the same hospital Candace will be in.
Well, my guess is Candace would be up in New Hampshire, so.
Well, they're right near Boston, aren't they?
They live in New Hampshire. I mean, they're you know, Nashua's hospitals. They're near there.
Oh, I'm so happy for them. Way to go, yeah. Danny. Good job, buddy.
That's awesome. I will have zero baby news to share on this show because I got snipped in 2009. So don't hold your breath. All right?
Now we're into the area where
I'm
we're getting too much
a brief
information.
Story here, and I'll leave it to your imagination. But snip, yes. About 20 years ago, okay. I've been working in a welding shop my whole life, okay? And I'm holding a part while my welder, Bob, do you remember Bob?
Yep, sure do.
Okay, he's welding, right? And I'm holding the part. And we had this old welder that if you weren't contacted with the bench, when you weld, the bench has to be grounded. Well, I was holding the part, and I was leaning over the bench, and I'm just going to say that the bench is waist high, okay? So I'm leaning over the bench, and I picked the part up.
Uh-oh.
And he struck an arc on the part, and the 220 volts went through the boys. And I'm screaming, he's laughing, and I'm like, oh, my God. I'm telling you, the electric went right through the boys. And I had some problems later on, and I went and I had to get an ultrasound, and son of a gun, if I didn't fry my epidermal or whatever the thing is that they snip, and the guy said you essentially had a vasectomy when that happened. So,
oh, jeez.
Anything else you want to know? I got a whole bunch of stories I could tell you.
I think I speak for the audience when I say I'm at my limit.
So I shoot blanks. That's it, baby. Worked out well. So.
Yeah.
Should have saved that for the after show. Sorry.
How about those Yankees?
Yeah. Great start.
Red Sox are in last place. Wow, Sales got hammered, huh?
Yeah, he did get hammered. Everything with him was, if you're not going to be able to overpower people, your location has to be good. And you could tell yesterday in watching, I watched some of it because it was opposite the NCAA tournament, but I did watch some of it. And he was, you know, Christian Vasquez would call for the ball inside, and all of a sudden the ball would float outside. If you're not going to be throwing 96, 97, which I don't think he's capable of doing anymore.
Yeah.
You have to locate. And that's where, let's go back to a guy like Pedro Martinez. Pedro Martinez could blow the ball by everybody. But what kept him effective longer in his career is that he could junk ball you and be accurate with it. And that's what made a big difference for him.
You know, one of the icon pitchers who, the same deal, Ron Guidry. Remember Ron Guidry?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. Louisiana Lightning.
I was at the game that he struck out 21 California Angels. So I was right behind first base dugout with my college friends. He lost his fastball, and he learned how to pitch again after that. Right. And he was still effective for a long time because he had to learn how to pitch. He couldn't overpower people anymore. And he was just a little guy. But he could run like a 900-700-yard dash. He was incredibly strong legs. Great pitcher. So, Anyway.
Well, it's, I mean, and that's what you have to do. I mean, Dennis Eckersley will tell you that early in his career when he's with the Cleveland Indians, he could blow the ball by anybody. He said, but the difference for him, what allowed him to have longevity in his career, was that he went from being a thrower to being a pitcher. And there's a big difference between being a thrower and a pitcher, and he finally understood that and allowed him to end up having a Hall of Fame career because of it.
Isn't that the reason why a lot of these guys who have Tommy John surgery come back and they're effective? Because they actually have to learn how to pitch again?
I think they kind of learned their lesson the first time around.
They could no longer overpower people.
Well, this is what bothers me, is that there's a disturbing trend out there right now. And this is a disturbing trend among young people. Where kids, I'm talking about kids who have not ascended to anything yet, are getting Tommy John surgery.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think people realize that there's been an incredible rise in Tommy John surgeries for kid athletes. In fact, Children's Health published this, that about the numbers being so much higher. The biggest age group needing Tommy John surgery in the U.S. now is between 15 and 19 years of age.
Wow.
Nearly 60% of all surgeries falling within that age group, according to the study by Rush University Medical Center. They say
what
the overusage
Tommy John
of
surgery. What is the procedure?
Well, the procedure deals with the elbow part of it.
Is it a ligament cartilage thing?
Well, in the past, you know, they used to have, other surgeries that, you know, that kids would need, like pediatric ACL reconstructions, concussions.
Yeah.
But what they have to do is they have to take care of the tendons in the elbow to do this.
Oh, the tendons. Okay. Yep.
Yeah. And now, there's always this deal you're better off. You're better after you have Tommy John. And the bottom line is, because I mean, what you're doing is you're repairing the ulnar collateral ligament in the elbow. Okay, so that's what you're repairing, the ulnar collateral ligament in the elbow.
Yep.
And they say you're better off after you have it done. Well, I ran that by a doctor one time. I said, is that true? And he looked at me. He says, you know, you're still getting cut. He says, you're getting cut. It's not as easy as everybody makes it out to be. It's not easy.
It's only because you see a lot of professional players have great success after they have it.
Yes. So. And there's not many. In fact, one's going tonight, Nathan Eovaldi.
Yeah.
Eovaldi's going tonight, and he was able to keep his career alive. There are many factors affecting the pressure for children to perform on the playing field. Parents are investing thousands of dollars a year on year-round sports leagues and programs on their children. Families spend up to 10% of their income on youth sports, with some spending up to $20,000 a year. Now, you could tell I invested nothing in my kids. So, I mean...
You would have...
Well, I coached them. I coached them for 14 years.
Oh, I know, but it depends on the kid. It's like Claire's granddaughter, Callie. I mean, she is the twin of who was the race driver, the girl.
Danica Patrick.
Yes, they could be twins. She's a tiny little thing. She's only like 4'10". She was number one in New England gymnastics. I mean, and they spent a fortune because she was so good. And so as a parent, you're kind of like, if your child has that kind of talent, don't you kind of have to exercise that, let them be as good as they can be? I don't know. I don't have kids.
Well,
so.
let them be as good as they can be, but you know what? I still have... There are a couple things when it comes to it. Number one, I want them to do something they love.
Yeah.
I don't want to push them into something just to push them into it because it might,
you're right. I don't mean it that way. Child has that special talent. I mean,
and
you
they
look
love
out
it.
And your child runs and springs up and does three flips and lands on her feet. All of a sudden you say, wow. That's not normal talent. You know,
if so they have a natural, have to, if they have a natural gift, and they love it, and they really love doing it, then push it and promote it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, but there's also another element to it, though. There is a point when you do something all the time as a kid. I don't mean as an adult, but as a kid, where you want to be a kid and you get sick of it.
Yep.
You want to be a kid. You see your friends doing other things.
Yep.
And there's also another element, too, where a parent has to be the athlete's advocate. There's a parent in the story who offers great advice because his son had Tommy John surgery when he was, what, 14, 15 years old. But he cautioned other parents about dangers of competitive youth sports. He said, quote, let your child rest. In hindsight, I should not have pushed him to play year-round nonstop because eventually it takes its toll. He was still growing. No one is going to scout your kid at 8, 9, or 10. He said, your child's health has to come first. And I think you have to figure out a point where I don't care if you're a prodigy as a baseball player, a football player, basketball player, piano, art, whatever. I mean, you may be a prodigy. You still have to allow them the time to grow and enjoy life as a kid, enjoy their friends, and then you'll be surprised that when they go back into the gym or go back to playing the piano or whatever, they'll be refreshed by it because they have balance in their life.
The tough part today is sometimes enjoying their friends means they sit behind a Xbox and play video games, you know?
Oh, I mean, you just explained the problem over our digital media area.
Yeah.
So it's... oh, I'm sorry.
It's more of a Nintendo Switch thing, but that's all right.
They now have that as gym class in some schools in Connecticut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, do they?
Play video
games. Yeah. You now have esports.
Yes.
Esports, which are televised.
That's
now, remember,
good. I watched it one day. I've never played them. But.
First of all, in terms of the money that's put out by the entity to televise it, is easy. You need a couple of cameras, some sound, you're done. There are no moving parts to this. That's why, for example, boxing was always so easy for television because the ring is 20 by 20. It's a confined area. Well, same thing with esports. It's the equivalent of having a studio show that has some action to it, but the action's on the screen in a video game.
Pretty neat.
But,
no good at that either.
Oh, yeah. Chris never tried to get me to do it, but Mike and Dan tried to get me to play video games. I tried it one time. I was like, this isn't really for me. It's not for me.
Try a slot machine. They're fun.
That's not for me either, and you know that.
They're about Wii bowling. I'm not going to say Wii golf.
Wii bowling's cool.
My friend Gary Goloszewski, his son Jack, right? When I went over to Goloszewski's house for the first time, Jack wanted to play Wii bowling with me, so I did it. Okay. It turned out that one of the characters he has in his game is me. So I've tried it and I got clobbered.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.